Fairy Tales and the Existential Predicament by Bruno Bettelheim. Many parents believe that only conscious reality or pleasant and wish-fulfilling images should be presented to the child, that he should be exposed only to the sunny side of things. But such one-sided fare nourishes the mind only in a one-sided way, and real life is not all sunny. There is widespread refusal to let children know that the source of much that goes wrong in life is due to our very own natures, the propensity of all men for acting aggressively, asocially, selfishly, out of anger and anxiety. Instead, we want our children to believe that all men are good, but children know that they are not always good, and often, even when they are, they would prefer not to be. This contradicts what they are told by their parents, and therefore makes the child a monster in his own eyes. The dominant culture wishes to pretend, particularly where children are concerned, that the dark side of man does not exist, and professes a belief in an optimistic meliorism. Psychoanalysis itself is viewed as having the purpose of making life easy, but this is not what its founder intended. Psychoanalysis was created to enable man to accept the problematic nature of life without being defeated by it, or giving in to escapism. Freud's prescription is that only by struggling courageously against what seem like overwhelming odds can man succeed in wringing meaning out of his existence. This is exactly the message that fairy tales get across to the child in manifold form, that a struggle against severe difficulties in life is unavoidable, is an intrinsic part of human existence, but that if one does not shy away but steadfastly meets unexpected and often unjust hardships, one masters all obstacles and at the end emerges victorious. Modern stories written for young children mainly avoid these existential problems, although they are crucial issues for all of us. The child needs most particularly to be given suggestions in symbolic form about how he may deal with these issues and grow safely into maturity. Safe stories mention neither death nor aging, the limits to our existence, nor the wish for eternal life. The fairy tale, by contrast, confronts the child squarely with the basic human predicaments. For example, many fairy stories begin with the death of a mother or father. In these tales, the death of the parent creates the most agonizing problems, as it, or the fear of it, does in real life. Other stories tell about an aging parent who decides that time has come to let the new generation take over. But before this can happen, the successor has to prove himself capable and worthy. The Brothers Grimm's story, The Three Feathers, begins, "There was once upon a time a king who had three sons. When the king had become old and weak and was thinking of his end, he did not know which of his sons should inherit the kingdom after him. In order to decide, the king sets all his sons a difficult task. The son who meets it best shall be king after my death." It is characteristic of fairy tales to state an existential dilemma briefly and pointedly. This permits the child to come to grips with the problem in its most essential form, where a more complex plot would confuse matters for him. The fairy tale simplifies all situations. Its figures are clearly drawn, and details, unless very important, are eliminated. All characters are typical rather than unique. Contrary to what takes place in many modern children's stories, in fairy tales, evil is as omnipresent as virtue. In practically every fairy tale, good and evil are given body in the form of some figures and their actions, as good and evil are omnipresent in life, and the propensities for both are present in every man. It is this duality which poses the moral problem, and requires the struggle to solve it. Evil is not without its attractions, symbolized by the mighty giant or dragon, the power of the witch, the cunning queen in Snow White. And often it is temporarily in the ascendancy. In many fairy tales, a usurper succeeds for a time in seizing the place which rightfully belongs to the hero, as the wicked sisters do in Cinderella. It is not that the evildoer is punished at the story's end, which makes immersing oneself in fairy stories an experience in moral education, although this is part of it. In fairy tales, as in life, punishment, or fear of it, is only a limited deterrent to crime. The conviction that crime does not pay is a much more effective deterrent, and that is why in fairy tales the bad person always loses out. It is not the fact that virtue wins out at the end which promotes morality, but the hero is most attractive to the child, who identifies with the hero in all his struggles. Because of this identification, the child imagines that he suffers with the hero his trials and tribulations, and triumphs with him as virtue is victorious. The child makes such identifications all on his own, and the inner and outer struggles of the hero imprint morality on him. The figures in fairy tales are not ambivalent, not good and bad at the same time, as we all are in reality. But since polarization dominates the child's mind, it also dominates fairy tales. A person is either good or bad, nothing in between. One brother is stupid, the other is clever. One sister is virtuous and industrious, the others are vile and lazy. One is beautiful, the others are ugly. One parent is all good, the other evil. The juxtaposition of opposite characters is not for the purpose of stressing right behavior, as would be true for cautionary tales. There are some amoral fairy tales where goodness or badness, beauty or ugliness play no role at all. Presenting the polarities of character permits the child to comprehend easily the difference between the two, which he could not do as readily were the figures drawn more true to life, with all the complexities that characterize real people. Ambiguities must wait until a relatively firm personality has been established on the basis of positive identifications. Then the child has a basis for understanding that there are great differences between people, and that therefore one has to make choices about who one wants to be. This basic decision, on which all later personality development will build, is facilitated by the polarizations of the fairy tale. Furthermore, a child's choices are based not so much on right versus wrong, as on who arouses his sympathy and who his antipathy. The more simple and straightforward a good character, the easier it is for a child to identify with it and to reject the bad other. The child identifies with the good hero not because of his goodness, but because the hero's condition makes a deep positive appeal to him. The question for the child is not, "Do I want to be good?" but, "Who do I want to be like?" The child decides this on the basis of projecting himself wholeheartedly into one character. If this fairy tale figure is a very good person, then the child decides that he wants to be good too. The deep inner conflicts originating in our primitive drives and our violent emotions are all denied in much of modern children's literature, and so the child is not helped in coping with them. But the child is subject to desperate feelings of loneliness and isolation, and he often experiences mortal anxiety. More often than not, he is unable to express these feelings in words, or he can do so only by indirection, fear of the dark, of some animal, anxiety about his body. Since it creates discomfort in a parent to recognize these emotions in his child, the parent tends to overlook them, or he belittles those spoken fears out of his own anxiety, believing this will cover over the child's fears. The fairy tale, by contrast, takes the existential anxieties and dilemmas very seriously and addresses itself directly to them. The need to be loved and the fear that one is thought worthless, the love of life, and the fear of death. Further, the fairy tale offers solutions in ways that the child can grasp on his level of understanding. For example, fairy tales pose the dilemma of wishing to live eternally by occasionally concluding, if they have not died, they are still alive. The other ending, and they lived happily ever after, does not for a moment fool the child that eternal life is possible. But it does indicate that which alone can take the sting out of the narrow limits of our time on this earth, forming a truly satisfying bond to another. The tales teach that when one has done this, one has reached the ultimate in emotional security of existence and permanence of relation available to man, and this alone can dissipate the fear of death. If one has found true adult love, the fairy story also tells, one doesn't need to wish for eternal life. This is suggested by another ending found in fairy tales. They lived for a long time afterward, happy and in pleasure. An uninformed view of the fairy tale sees in this type of ending an unrealistic wish fulfillment, missing completely the important message it conveys to the child. These tales tell him that by forming a true interpersonal relation, one escapes the separation anxiety which haunts him, and which sets the stage for many fairy tales, but is always resolved at the story's ending. Furthermore, the story tells, the ending is not made possible, as the child wishes and believes, by holding on to his mother eternally. If we try to escape separation anxiety and death anxiety by desperately keeping our grasp on our parents, we will only be cruelly forced out, like Hansel and Gretel. Only by going out into the world can the fairy tale hero, child, find himself there, and as he does, he will also find the other with whom he will be able to live happily ever, that is, without ever again having to experience separation anxiety. The fairy tale is future-oriented and guides the child, in terms he can understand in both his conscious and his unconscious mind, to relinquish his infantile dependency wishes and achieve a more satisfying, independent existence. Today, children no longer grow up within the security of an extended family or of a well-integrated community. Therefore, even more than at the times fairy tales were invented, it is important to provide the modern child with images of heroes who have to go out into the world all by themselves and who, although originally ignorant of the ultimate things, find secure places in the world by following their right way with deep inner confidence. The fairy tale hero proceeds for a time in isolation, as the modern child often feels isolated. The hero is helped by being in touch with primitive things, a tree, an animal, nature, as the child feels more in touch with those things than most adults do. The fate of these heroes convinces the child that, like them, he may feel outcast and abandoned in the world, groping in the dark, but like them, in the course of his life, he will be guided step by step and given help when it is needed. Today, even more than in past times, the child needs the reassurance offered by the image of the isolated man who nevertheless is capable of achieving meaningful and rewarding relations with the world around him.